Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Mem He. Today's daf has been dedicated by the Asa family in honor of Yosef and Norma Asa. Hashem Aleihem Yehiyu. Amen. Today's daf is being studied the Ayin Nishmat Hacham Baruch, the Fael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. We are going to begin today's daf on Kuf Mem Dalet Amud Sheni, and we are 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines from the bottom, last two words on the line. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shemuel. New point. Sochet Adam Eshkol Shel Anavim Letoch HaKedera Aval Lo Letoch HaKe'ara. So the statement of Yehuda Amar Shemuel is regarding squeezing a cluster of grapes. While he says it is permissible to squeeze it in a kedera, that would be a pot where usually is designated for food and cooking, aval lo letoch hakeara, but not in a dish. Now, what is the difference between the two? So Rashi tells us, Rashi is the dibur matchil letoch hakedera shel tavshil letakeno. You're allowed to squeeze into a pot of food in order to enhance the food. Now, why is that not considered sechita? After all, you're squeezing. So that she continues, demucha milta delav lemashke ba'ele, which means you're not using it for the liquid that's coming out, ela leochel, which means the drink that comes out of the grape has a status of ochel, because it's going into ochel. Ve'en ze derech perikato. And that is not similar to extracting, let's say, a regular sa'ita, we're extracting a liquid from the food. And it's considered as if you're extracting food from food. Now, we know that sa'ita is a tuldah of dash. And dash, we explained, is that you have the husk, if you want to call it, and you bang it, and you take out the kernel, which is something else. Here, you're not taking out something else. It's considered taking out food from food. So it's not domeh to dash. Only when you're taking out a liquid, so that's considered you're taking out something else from the grape in that case. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is telling us a very important hidush in Sechita, that if you squeeze it into a pot of food, so therefore it's not a problem, it is mutar. However, in a kara, which would be a plate or a platter, so that would be asur. Why? Rashi, aba lo letoch kara dezimin delemashke ka'e. Rashi, if you want to medayek correctly, he says because sometimes you do put juice in a platter, in a kara. Ve'afalgav de bekara lo shati inish. Even though you don't drink from a kara, lo muhamilta, it's not clear that you're doing it for ochel. Ve'ika isur. From Rashi, it's mashman, that's the way they learn. It's like a marit ayin issue, which means in a pot where you have food, so clearly it's going to be mutar. In an empty ke'ara, so even though it's possible that he's doing it for the mashke, but since, it's possible he's doing it for the ochel, but since sometimes in a ke'ara it can be done for the mashke itself, so it's going to be as soon under all circumstances. Now, of course, if you had food in the ke'ara, and you squeeze right over the food, and that's not a question. Of course, it would be mutar. It's not even a merit ayin issue. We're talking about an empty kara. So that she's telling you that it's asur, even it sounds like if his intention is for to eventually put ochel, but since it's such a keli, which sometimes is used for mashkin, and therefore it's not evident from what he's doing that it's for ochel, as like a pot. So smashra, in a pot, you can even put it in an empty pot. Again, so long as your intention is to put food. Because in a pot, everybody knows, a pot, it's mukhah that there's going to be food in there. Okay, so that's the way that she is
understanding. The Gemara continues. The Gemara says, "Amar Rav Chisda, midivrei Rabbeinu, from the words of Rabbeinu, meaning of Yehuda Mar Shemuel, nilmad. We could learn another halakha from this. Cholev Adam Ez letoch hakedera. It would be permissible for a person to milk a goat into a kedera. Again, you're milking that. Would also be like sohet. Actually, milking an animal is called mefarek, where you're extracting the milk from the udders of the cow. And mefarek is also a toldah of dash. So he's saying, based on what you're just telling me about sahita, I can apply that to mefarek. Whereas when I'm squeezing the milk out of the udders, if I'm doing it into a kidera, that's where there's food, so it'll be okay. Aval lo letoch hakeara. But you will not be able to do it in a ke'ara, because that is for mashke. Alma kasabar, and we can apply from this, mashke haba le'ochel, ochelu. And the implication is that a mashke that is being poured into food is considered food. And therefore it's considered you're separating food from food, and that's not considered dash, and that's why it is butar. Now the bottom Tosfot here in Cholev Adam Ez, he says in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, we'll read it together, that Eder Rabbeinu Tam Dahainu Davka Biyom Tov. So Tosfot says this milking the animal can only be applicable on Yom Tov. Why? Dehazia Behema La'achila, which means the animal could be eaten on Yom Tov. After all, you're allowed to make Shaita. So havi kemo uchla de'efrat, and therefore we consider it that, you know, the animal is not mukse, obviously it's considered ochel itself, and therefore what's inside the udders of the cow is all considered ochel, so you're just separating the ochel from the ochel. However, aval b'shabbat lo hazya l'shaita, and on Shabbat this animal obviously cannot be slaughtered. So Tosfot says kemo dash hashiva. So then it's going to be considered dash. Why? Because the animal is going to be considered like the husk, and therefore pulling out the milk, that's going to be like taking out the kernel. So therefore, on this kiddush of milking, Tosfot makes a important condition, dafka on Yom Tov, but you would not be allowed to milk an animal even into a ke'ara on Shabbat, because that is more similar to dash, as opposed to Yom Tov, where the animal is considered ochel, because it's hazi La'akila.
The chiluk between
Ke'ara
and Kedera,
the chiluk between Ke'ara and Kedera, it seems on Yom, even on Yom Tov, it could be the Tosfot brings it down. One second. Uksiholev habikut l'och mitok psolet v'amichem ashwa v'bahag the Yom Tov Aidi. Okay. Then he just says, and we'll finish, and then we'll get to that question. Umiyu sechitad zetim v'anavim deshari le'el le'toch Kedera. Hainu afilu b'Shabbat, kevan de'eskol hajah la'achila. But the grape, since the grape is ra'u la'achila itself, the shell of the grape, so if you're squeezing it into a kedera, it'll be mutar, because I consider it ochel from ochel. Unless we say that even on Yom Tov, they made a chiluk like atu, a case of where it's regular sechita. So it could be they wanted to make a shinui, but that is something to analyze. So again, as we explained, that on Yom Tov, since the animal is considered an ochel, so dafka when you're putting the milk that you're milking from the cow into a kedera with his food, so that's considered ochel to ochel. You have no problem. However, when you go into a ke'ara where it's considered for mashke, so that's going, you're taking a mashke from an ochel, and that's considered regular sechita or mifarek, which is a todah dedash, which would be asud as well. Just as well if one was squeezing other fruits, etc., in such a way. Comes the Gemara now and asks a question. Gemara says, Mativ Rami Bar Hama. Rami Bar Hama asks a question. Zav Shecholev et ha'ez. Interesting case. You have a zav. So the zav is considered avatum'ah. And he is milking a goat. Ha'chalav tameh. So the Gemara says that that milk that he's drawing out of the udders of the goat is tameh. So the Gemara wants to analyze. Ve'i amart mashke haba le'ochlin ochelu. Now, from the fact that it did not make a chiluk where he's putting the milk, that's mashma, even if he's putting the milk in a kedera with food, and still you're telling me that that milk is tameh. Now, that milk has a din of ochel. Now, we know that ochel cannot become tameh unless it was mukshar first. So where was it mukshar? Which means an ochel needs to be prepared, that it had to be in contact with one of the seven mashkim first. So how could you tell me when the zav is milking the ayez? So you're telling me what? But, and you don't tell me a chiluk. Even if you're milking the ayez into food, that means what? What's coming out is considered ochel. And you tell me that that milk that's considered ochel is tameh. How does it tameh? The Gemara says, b'may it keshar. With what did it become mukshar l'tumah? So the which, and therefore, what's the question? Ela must be is considered a meshkeh, because a meshkeh does not need to be mukshar. It itself becomes tameh off the bat. How could you tell me it's a ochel? So the Gemara says, k'damar Rabbi Yochanan betipa meluchlechet al pi adad. So we can explain, like Rabbi Yochanan explained in a different case regarding a lady that was nursing. So he discussed that the original milk that comes out of the lady's breast that she places on the dad itself in order to make it easy for the other milk to come out or for the child to latch on. So therefore, that original milk that comes out is not ochel. That original milk is considered mashkin. So just like Rabbi Yochanan said that there's milk that the lady places on the dad, hacha name b'tipam meluchlechet al pi adad. We'll say that the goat, that when he's milking, first he places some milk on the dad itself, on the udder itself, and that milk is considered meshkeh. And now when the subsequent milk, which is considered ochel, comes out, it comes in contact with the milk that's on the dad, it's makshirit, and now already it's able to become susceptible to tumah. So really it can be considered ochel. Where was the hakshara? On the milk that was placed on the dad. Okay, so comes the Gemara and says, Mativ Ravina. Ravina has a question. Tameh met. You have somebody that received tum'ah from a met, which means he is an avat tum'ah. Shesachat zetim va'anavim, and he squeezed olives or grapes. Kabetza mechuvenet tahor. If he squeezed exactly the size of a kabetza, so then the juice that comes out of it is going to be tahor. Now, once he touches the grapes, the grape itself becomes tameh from the tamemet. Now, when you squeeze it out, now the juice that comes out of it, the question is, how do you consider that juice? Does that juice become tameh or not? Now, we have a rule by tum'at mit that only a kabetza is able to metameh more food. Which means, if the tameme touched the kabetza of food, and that kabetza subsequently touched more food, it can transmit. But less than a kabetza shi'ur, that became tameh from a tameh met, cannot transmit. So if the grapes, let's say, are exactly the size of a kabetza, what's going to happen when he squeezes it? Immediately it's going to become less. And therefore, the juice that's coming out is coming in contact with the grape that is less than a kabetza, and therefore cannot receive tum'ah. So the Gemara makes a duke. Hayoter me kabetza tameh. But if he squeezed, let's say, grapes that were more than a kabetza, so now when he squeezed it, it maintained its shiur of a kabetza. The tum'ah of the grape can now metameh the juice that is coming out. Now, we're assuming even if he's squeezing it into food, and therefore that juice is going to be considered what? That juice is going to be considered ochel. So the Gemara says, "V'i amat mashkeh ba leochel ochel ava." And if you tell me that the mashkeh that comes out of ochel and ochel is considered ochel, b'mayit keshar. Again, the same questions we asked earlier. You need hechsher in order for the tameh met to metameh. You need hechsher on that juice that's considered ochel. Where was the hechsher? So who motiv la v'hu mifarek la? He asked the question. Ravina asked the question, and he answered the question. Besochet letocha ke'ara. We'll have to say that this was talking about where you were actually being sohed in a ki'ara, meaning it was for mashkin, and therefore the juice that's coming out is the din of mashke, and therefore doesn't need hekshet. It's tameh on its own. So we have to make an ukimta, we have to make a condition or a establishment on that case that it's dafka in a ki'ara. But you're right, if it was in a kedera, so therefore it would not become tameh because there was no hakshara. Amar Yirmiyah comes along and says, ketana'eh. What is ketana'eh? What is a mahlo ketana'im? This is what we just said, a mashke that's going into an ochel. Is it considered ochel or not? It's actually a mahloket tanaim. And what's the case? A mahalik ba'anavim. What is a person doing? He has his hala, he has his bread, and he's, we'll say, basting or smearing the top of the hala with the juice of grapes. He squeezes the grapes over the top of the bread. The Mefashim explained it makes it crusty, the top of the bread. So therefore, he was squeezing the grapes over the hala. Ha-mahalik ba'anavim. Literally, mahalik means he's shining. It also gives it a shine. So the Gemara says, lo hukshar. So one opinion says, those grapes are not considered mukshar. Rabbi Yehuda omer hukshar. Where Rabbi Yehuda says, no, those grapes are considered prepared, meaning to receive tum'ah. Now, let's analyze what we're talking about. So the Gemara says, my la ba'aka mipalge. Must be the machloket of it, if the grapes became mukshar or not. Mor sabar, one rabbi holds, mashke haba le'ochel, ochelu. The first rabbi holds that the mashke that's going onto food is considered food. And therefore, since it's food, it's lo hukshar. Because food needs to be mukshar in order to become susceptible to tum'ah. And since this was just considered food that fell onto the halal, it was not mukshar, therefore no mukshar. And therefore it's not susceptible to tum'ah. Umor sabar lav ochilu. And the other rabbi must hold that no, that even if it's falling onto food, it's considered a mashke. And therefore mashke automatically is mukshar. So then we can explain the mahloket, if the grapes have become mukshar or not, is dependent on how do you consider the deen of when you're squeezing something onto an ochel. Let's read the Rashi. Rashi says, "Amahlik ba'anavim." You can read that together inside. Nachtom, that's a baker. Amahlik peneki karotav, he's smoothing or shining, I should say, the top of his loaves of bread. Ba'anavim shesohet hamashke ala kikar, and he's squeezing the juice on the bread. Hukshar ha'ochel, meaning what's the ochel? Ha'anavim hukshiru. She tells us it's referring to the grapes themselves. And what is the issue over here? The issue is over here, how are the grapes going to become mukshar? Let's explain it again. If you hold that when you're squeezing the juice that comes out is considered an ochel, so therefore an ochel needs to be mukshar. And since it was not mukshar, therefore there is no tum'ah. However, you hold it's a mashke, so the mashke automatically has a din of hakshara for tum'ah. So the Gemara says, "Amar Papa, dekule alma mashke haba le'ochel lav ochelu." Says no, you don't have to explain the machlok like that. I can tell you, everybody holds it's lav ochel, meaning everybody holds that what it is a mashke. Oh, so what's the machloket? V'achab b'mashke haba le'ibud kamefalge. It's a different machloket here. Here, what's happening to this mashke that you're pouring onto the bread? It's going to be destroyed. How? It's going to be burnt up into the oven. It's going to evaporate. So we have a mahloket over here on a mashke that eventually is going to be evaporated. Is it considered mukshar or not? Mor sabar mashkehu. The first rabbi says, no, it's considered a mashke, even though eventually it's going to be evaporated, and therefore it's considered mukshar. And therefore, which means the grape itself now was considered mukshar. Mor sabar la mashkehu. And the other rabbi says, no, a mashke that eventually is going to be evaporated is not a mashke from the inception. And therefore, even though it's touching the grape is not going to become mukshar. So it had nothing to do with the mahloket of pouring it onto food. Is it considered a food or is it considered an ochel? Different mahloket. The mahloket is mashkeh that's going to ibud. Is it considered a mashkeh or not? Uflukta da'ari tana'eh. And actually, it's similar to the machloket of the following tana'im. Detanya, we have a braita. Hamifaseya bezetim biyadayim misoavot. What is the guy doing? He's squeezing olives biyadayim misoavot with hands that are literally misoavot means dirty, meaning they are tameh. Let's say, for practical purposes, we'll say his hands are a sheni netuma. Now we know if these olives, let's say, would be considered teruma, so his hands technically can make the olives a shilishi. But only if the olives first were mukshar. Okay? So Rashi tells us, Hamifaseya bezetim, why is he squeezing these olives? Rashi says, Kedeshi yu rakin. He wants them to become softened. So the Gemara says, Hukshar. So and then we're going to consider it that the olives are hukshar. Why? So that she says, Dini hale b'mishchad de tayif alayu. He's happy with the olive oil that's dripping on the olives. Shemitoch kach hem marbim ta'am. Because it gives the olive a good taste. And therefore, it's clearly considered a mashkeh because he wants it there. And since he wants it there, the olive becomes mukshar. And now his hands are misoavot. If the olives are terumah, let's say, he can make it to metameh. Now, lesoftan b'melach lo mukshar. That means if, let's say his intent is he wants to soak the olives in oil. I'm sorry, in salt. The problem is the salt doesn't stick to the olive because the olive is hard. So he wants the salt to stick to the olive. So what does he do? He squeezes the olive a little in order to get some juice on it. Right? So the salt will stick. In that case, Rashi says, "Lo hukshar, delo mechaben lemashkeh didu deli'aker." Which is here, he's not really too concerned about the juice that comes out. So this is more like ibud. He doesn't care about the juice. He was more concerned about the fact that now it's able to stick the salt on it. So therefore, lo hukshar. Lida imi giyu zetav limsok. If he's squeezing it in order to know if his olives reach the time to press them, you know, to process them to make oil, if that's the reason why he's squeezing them, so Rashi says, Lida imigiyaz etav limsok, sarichu lirot im shomno noach latzet. He has to see if the oil is coming out, you know, easily. Miyu hamashkeh azil leibud. But in this case, Omei is not using the mashkeh at all. I mean, he doesn't need the mashkeh that's coming out. It's totally going, you know, to ibud. So it says, imlav, that lo ukshar. So in that case, lo ukshar, why? Because the mashkeh, even though it's touching the olive, since the purpose of that is le'ibud, so the first shita says what? Lo ukshar. Rabbi Yehuda omer ukshar. Rabbi Yehuda says, in that case, even though the olive oil is being holech le'ibud, it still has the ability to be makshir. So you see, it's actually machlok and tana'im, if mashkeh sheholech le'ibud, can it have the ability to be makshir or not? And the case that we're discussing clearly is a case where you're squeezing the olives to see if they're worthy now to go to the next process of pressing them. That oil that you're squeezing out is holech le'ibud. And still we have a mahloket between Tana Kama and Rabbi Yehuda, exactly, if it's mukshar or not. The Gemara says, "My la da'akam ipalge." It must be the machloket is the more sabar mashkeh omed de'ibud mashkehu. And since it's considered a mashkeh, it's makshir. Umor sabar na mashkehu. Amar Rabuna ben Rabbi Yeshua. So now Rabuna ben Rabbi Yeshua comes along and says, "Wait, hanet tana'e b'mashkeh omed de'ibud pili." No question. By the olive case, it's no doubt that indeed is the machloket. If we say mashkeh ha'omed le'ibud, is it considered a mashkeh or not? He says, I don't argue with you. You learned the case of the olives correctly. Ve'hanach tana'e, but the case of the grapes that you're squeezing over the bread, That's not the machloket. So what's the machloket? The machloket is a mashke that you're using not to drink, but where you're using it to shine the bread, is that considered a mashke or not? So it's a different machloket. So it comes out, we really had three different options in how to learn the machloket between squeezing the grapes on the bread. And the first way we understood why it's the classic machloket of mashke habale ochlin. Is it considered ke'ochil or is it considered mashke? Then we fell off that. Then we came along and said the machloket is mashke ha'omed le'ibud. Is it considered a mashke or not? And now we're coming along and saying, no, it's not the machloket. The machloket is a mashke that's omed le'sihsuah, meaning it's in order to shine. So if you consider that a mashke or not, so that is the machloket.
It's not omed le'ibud.
Right, nothing to do with Omed Libud. You're right, there is a concept of Omed Libud or not. That's a different machlok, that's a machlok by the olives. Actually, it's nice to read this sheet together. Hani Tanae, the mefaseyat by the olives, by squeezing the olives, vadai bimashkeh Omed Libud Peligi. That's for sure the machlok, et kedam nina. Like we said, Abal, Tanae de mahlik, but the Tanaim are talking about putting the, shining the bread with the grapes, lab be'omed li'ibud peligi, te'lav li'ibud azal. Because if you think about it, it doesn't go li'ibud, but bottom line, it stays on the bread. His bottom line is still there. It might be in a different form, but it's there. Share le'sachseho chenetno, v'are me'sachseho. And it's doing its purpose. Ela be'meshkeh omed, le'sachseho le'okel kamepalge. Okay, de'ina me'm mashkeh ba'al ochel mashkehu, which is even if you want to consider it a mashkeh, which is even if you're holding the other mahlokah, that a mashkeh that goes on a ochel is considered a mashkeh, but that's only when you're going to save it to drink it. However, here, it's a mashkeh that's being used as a shiner, and then we have a mahlokah. Is it considered a mashkeh or not? That's what she says. Comes again, Gemara and says, Amar bizera. Amar Rabbi Hayya bar Ashe Amar Rav. So now we're going to say the same halakha that we've been mentioning till now, but now we're saying it in the name of Rav. Till now we've said it in the name of Rabbi Yudama Shimuel. Now we're going to say the same deen when you're squeezing grapes into food or you're squeezing it into a kedera or a keara. Till now we've said the statement in the name of Shimuel. Now we're saying the same deen in the name of Rav. And what's the deen? Sochet Adam Eshkol Shina Rabim Natocha Kedera. Right, that's the pot, that's the food. Aval lo letoch ha keara, but not in the dish. Again, because that's considered a mashke. Vedag letziro, but squeezing a fish to take out its brine, afilu letoch ha keara. That's be permissible even in the keara, because Rav holds the brine of a fish is always considered ochel. It's never considered a mashke. Now, so fish is the exception. Yativ Rav Dimi v'ka'amar la lehashmata. So Rav Dimi sat down and he said over the halakha we just said over in the name of Rav. Amar le Abayel Rav Dimi. So when he heard this, Abayel tells Rav Dimi, Atun mishemed de Rav matnitun. He says, you learned that statement in the name of Rav. Ve'la kasha lechu. And if we have no questions, there's no contradictions. Anan mishemed Shmuel matninan la. That we happen to learn that statement in the name of Shmuel vekashyalan, and we have a problem. We have a contradiction in something that Shmuel said in a different place. Mi amar Shmuel daglet siro afil lotocha kehara. Could Shmuel have said that a fish is mutar even in a kehara because the brine of the fish is considered ochel? And what's the logic mean? Because since people don't normally squeeze the fish for its to drink the brine, and therefore must be considered always a okay. Could Shmuel have ever said such a thing? Why not? Well, veha itmar, because we have a statement. Kevashim shesachtan. Kevashim are exactly pickled vegetables. Okay, let's take a classical case of a pickle itself. You took a cucumber and you put it in vinegar. Okay? So now it has some vinegar in the pickle itself. So it says now you squeezed out some of that vinegar. Amar Rav legufan mutar. If you're doing it in order to eat the pickle, so it's going to be mutar. Why? Because that's not considered
mefarek, it's not considered se'ita, Rashi's lashon. Im le'echol ha-kevashim sohtan, if it's in order to eat the pickles, you're squeezing them out. Mimashkeat saf alehem, from the liquid that's floating on top of them, va'nibla bahem, or that's inside of them. Mutalech ha-tahira, de'lo mefareku, ho'il ve'lav le'mashkeh ho'sarich. He doesn't care for the mashkeh. Le'mimehem patur aval asur. But if you're doing it for the juice, so it's going to be patur aval asur. Now, why is it not going to be asur deoraita? Patur aval asur derabanan. Because since this vinegar does not emanate from the pickle itself, it's from outside, so it's not like a regular case of sehaita. So therefore, it's going to be asur, but it's only be asur midrabanan. Now, Gemara continues. Shalkut is cooked vegetables. Ben legufan, ben limehen mutar. Squeezing cooked vegetables, if you're doing it for the vegetables themselves. So for short, even if you're doing it for the liquid that's coming out of it, it is still mutar. What's the rationale that she says? Shalkut afilu limehen lav mashkininu ela ochel. This is not the derech to take cooked vegetables and squeeze them, which means it's not considered a liquid. It's all considered food. Right? So shalkut are a little more lenient than kevashim. Where kevashim, if you're doing it for the liquid, it's assumed that a banan, but shalkut means cooked vegetables. If you squeeze them, it's considered ochel legamre, and therefore no problem of sa'ita. That's Rav's opinion. Ushmoel amar, ehad kevashim, ve'ehad shalkut, whether it's pickled items or whether it is cooked vegetables, legufan mutar. If you're doing it for itself, meaning for the vegetable itself, mutar. Limimehem patur aval asur. What do you see? That he holds that even if you're doing by cooked vegetables, where it's not the derech to squeeze them, and still he's telling you if you can do it for memehen, if you want it for the juice, it's going to be patur aval asur. So the same thing is applied by the fish. Even though the fish, people don't eat the brine for itself, but what? If you're doing it for the brine, it should be asur. How could you tell me that Shmuel's going to hold by the fish that the brine is mutar, even if you're doing it in a kederah for the mashkin? What are you talking about? It shouldn't be worse than shalkut. And by shalkut, you were mahmir. Shalkut, you said, even though, let's say, it's not the derech, but still you said, well, if you're doing it for the mayim, it's going to be a problem. So that she says, lememehen patur aval asur, v'hashalkut, the cooked vegetable, dumya de dag letziranu. It's domeh to the fish with its brine. Ve'lo shayl v'shmonech etayla. So you that learned that statement in the name of Rav, you're okay. We learned the statement in the name of Shmuel, and we're faced with this contradiction. Amar le, so he told them back, which means who was talking to? It was Rav Dimi was sitting down and said the Shmata, and Abaye told Rav Dimi, you learned from the name of Rav, you have no problem. So Rav Dimi says, Amar le, ha Elohim, meaning he made like a swear. Enai ra'u velo zav. My eyes saw it, and not a stranger. Mepume derbi yirmiya shami ali. I heard it from the mouth of Rabbi Yirmiya. Verabi yirmiya mirabi zera. Verabi zera mirabhiya bar asher. Verabhiya bar asher mirav. Which means, I'm telling you clearly, the statement is not in Shmuel's name. And therefore you have a question. I'm telling you the history of the statement. And therefore in the name of Rav. And therefore, he says he heard it directly. So comes the Gemara and says, Gufa. We learned in the previous statement regarding the kevashim and the shalkot. Kevashim shesahatan, you have pickles. So now we're going to review the shitot. If you squeeze them, amar rav, legufan mutar. If it's for the goof of the pickles themselves, mutar, because that's not considered sehita, because
you don't care for the mashkim. The mimehen patur, abal asur. For the juice itself, it's going to be asumad rabbanan, as we explained earlier, since the juice doesn't emanate from the pickles themselves, so it's only asumad rabbanan, external. Veshalkut, and regarding cooked vegetables, ben le gufan, ben le mimehen mutar. Good, that was Rav's opinion. Ushmoel amar, ehadze vehadze. Whether it's pickles or cooked vegetables, le gufan mutar. If you're doing it for the vegetables themselves, mutar, le mimehen patur. But you're doing it for the juice, it's going to be patur. Aval asur. Rabbi Yohanan amar. Now Rabbi Yohanan has the third shita. Ehad kevashim vehad shelakot. Whether it is pickles or cooked vegetables, le gufan mutar, le mimehen hayav hatat. So Rabbi Yohanan ups the ante over here. He comes along and says, if you're doing it le mimehen, not patur aval asur. It's going to indeed be hayav hatat. Now the Gemara is going to challenge all three opinions. This metive is against all three rabbis. Sohatin kevashim b'shabbat etzorich shabbat. It is permissible to squeeze kevashim, again, that's the pickles, on Shabbat for Shabbat. Aval lo lemotzei Shabbat. Okay, but of course you cannot squeeze them on Shabbat for use on Motzei Shabbat. Now, Rashi comes along and says, Sohatin kevashim, velo mafrig ben legufan ben limehem. Here, this statement did not make a chinuk if you're doing it for the pickle or you're doing it for the juice. Continue Rashi, veshari lechetahila, vekasha lekulehu. This statement raises a question on everybody. Because according to Rav, he's telling if you're doing it for the mayim, it's patur aval asur. According to Shmuel, it's patur aval asur. According to Rabbi Yohanan, it's going to be hayav chatat. So this statement over here poses a question on everybody. Now, vizetin ba'anavim lo yishot. Now, regarding olives and grapes, do not squeeze them at all. V'imsachat hayav chatat. Okay, we have no problem with that. Now, give us this. Kasha l'Rav, kasha l'Shmuel, kasha l'Rabbi Yohanan. It's a question on all three opinions. So the Gemara says, Rav mitaretz l'tahameh, Shmuel mitaretz l'tahameh, Rabbi Yohanan mitaretz l'tahameh. Each rabbi can answer according to his reasoning. And we begin. Rav mitaretz l'tahameh, Rav will explain according to his reasoning. Sohatin kevashim b'shabbat netzorek ha-shabbat, aval lo lemotzei Shabbat. That statement that says you can squeeze them on Shabbat, b'min devarim amorim, has to read into it, legufar. Hey, were you doing it for the pickle? Aval lemimeh patur aval asur. Vishalkut, and regarding cooked vegetables, ben the gufan, ben the mimen, mutar. Vizetim v'anavim lo yishot. And you cannot squeeze zetim v'anavim at all, v'imsahatar, hayav hatat. So that can fix up the statement. Ushmuel metaretz etameh. How's Shmuel going to fix it up? Sohatin kevashim b'shabbat letzorek ha-shabbat. You can squeeze the kevashim on Shabbat. V'hu adin l'shalkut. When is it permissible? Only legufan. Aval lemimehen, but if you're doing it for the juice, according to Shmuel, patur aval asur. Vezetim v'anavim lo yischot v'im sachat chayav chatat. How is Rabbi Yohanan going to answer? Rabbi Yohanan mitaretz l'tahameh. Again, Rabbi Yohanan held that if you do it for mimehen, it's chayav chatat. So he'll learn like this. Sochatin kevashim letzorech haShabbat, aval lo lemotzei Shabbat. Echad kevashim v'echad shilakot. It's permissible whether it's shilakim or shilakot or kevashim. Bam medavarim legufan. That's only talking about where you're doing it for the to eat the actual vegetable. Aval lemimehen lo yishot. But if it's for the juice, don't do it. Ve'im sachat na'asa kemo shesachat zetim v'anavim v'hayav chatat. It's as if you squeezed zetim and hanabim, which is going to be a chayav chatat. So that's how he connects the chayav chatat into the zetim and hanabim. Amar chayav barashe amarav. Devar Torah, according to the Torah law, eno chayav ela al dirisat zetim v'anavim bilvad. So now he's coming along and saying, this thing of sechita that we're talking about on Shabbat, from the Torah law, only two fruits or two items are subject to the Torah law. What is that? Zetim anavim. Barim Rashi, Devar Torah. Kelomar, Asra Torah melechet o melacha v'dirichat zetim anavim hu. Da'avya melacha. Aval sh'ar dirichot, all other types of crushing, lav or hayu behachim. Melacha. She's the only dirichah, the only crushing that the Sumra Torah is items that is the derech. What's the derech? Zeitim and Alim. Everything else would be the Rabbanan at best. So comes the Gemara and says, "Vehen tana debim menashe, tevar Torah enu hayav ela al derisat zeitim va'anavim bilvad." So he repeats that statement. Now they made another statement as well. The en ed mepi ed kasher ela le'edut isha bilvad. We have a law that says while we're allowed to accept testimony from a witness, but we cannot accept a testimony from a witness that saw it or heard it from another witness. That's called the ed mepi ed. Means the witness himself has to give the testimony. He can't say, "Oh, I'm testifying based on what somebody else saw, somebody else told me, that he repeated it to me." That's called the Ed Mipi Ayed. So we don't accept Ed Mipi Ayed only Le'edut Isha, which means in a case where a lady's husband is missing, and we don't know if he died or not, therefore she's tied up, she can't get married, because maybe her husband is still alive, and that's considered an Aguna. So the rabbis were lenient in order to matir a lady, in order to get married, if a witness comes and says, "I heard from another witness that says the husband died," even though it's Ed Mipi Ed, the Hakamim were lenient in Yan Aguna. Now you're going to tell me, what do you mean? How can the rabbis be lenient by a Doraita? I mean, this is Chora, it's a Doraita law that you have to, it says, you have to hear from the witnesses themselves. So that she comes along and tells us, because since anybody that gets married, you get married according to the da'at of the Hakamim, like we say, Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. So therefore the rabbis have the ability to uproot the Kiddushin retroactively. Because since they're getting married to the first husband, right? So we want to now allow her to get married again based on her Ed Mipi Ed. So therefore the rabbis really have an ability to uproot that marriage if it wasn't there in the first place. Therefore, we accept Ed Mipi Ed. It's not a contradiction going against a Torah law. Ibayelu, so the Gemara now has a question. Ed Mipi Ed Le'edut Bechor Mahu. Okay, let's review the law of a Bechor. Bechor is the firstborn animal that is born, that you have to give it to the Kohen. Okay, and the Kohen becomes his property, he has to bring it on the Mizbeah. However, let's say the Bechor gets a mum, gets a blemish, a wound, then already the law is the Kohen could slaughter it and eat it. Okay, it becomes his to eat. Now, the question is that A Kohen, there was problems in the olden days where the Kohanim would want the animal for themselves. They don't want to put it on the Mizbeah. So they would come along and put the wound themselves. And then come along and say, well listen, you know, the animal got a wound on it. So therefore, Kohanim are really not trusted regarding this deen of Bechor. Let's read Rashi, second line, the Adut Bechor, Bechor biyad Kohen. Yeah, the Bechor, it's in the hands of the Kohen. Kishenatno Yisrael lo shalem. The Yisrael gave it to him, it was without blemish. Ve'ira lo bo mum. And now all of a sudden a mum surfaced. Kaimalam bebechorot nechshedu Kohanim latil mum bebechor. The Kohanim was suspected of putting a mum in the Bechor. Ve'en ne'eman lomar mum ze nafad bo me'elav. We don't trust the Kohen to say it just came by itself. V'tzarich labi aidim. Oh, so what does he have to do? He has to bring a witness to testify. V'amin ra'atam de'isha kishra le'edut zu. And the Gemara says over there, we'll even take a lady who not normally is accepted as a witness, but for the edut, for the mum of a bechor, you can even accept a lady. So the Gemara is saying, you can accept a lady. So can you also accept ed mipi ed? If a witness comes along and says, "I didn't see it, but I heard from somebody that testified that the mum came after," so that's the question of the Gemara. So the Gemara says again, top line, "Ibaylu ayet mipi ayet le'edut bechor mahu." Rav Amar Asir, Rav Ami Asir, Rav Ami says Asur, can't accept it. Rav Asir Shari. Rav Asir says mutar. Amar le Rav Amed Rav Asir, Rav Amed Taz Rav Asir. Ve'at Tana Deve Menashia. We have a statement. En ed mipi ed kasher ela le'edut isha bilvad. What are you talking? The statement says you only accept ed mipi ed by edut isha and not by bechor. So he says ema le'edut sha isha kashera la bilvad. Instead of saying the statement that only le'edut isha, learn it that only a type of edut that a lady is acceptable to be an ed. And since a lady is acceptable to be an ed by the Bechor, so therefore we'll also accept ed mipi ed. So therefore, no problem. Rav Yemar akshar ed mipi ed le Bechor. So Rav Yemar came along, he was makshir ed mipi ed for the Bechor. Kari ale moremor. So moremor called on Rav Yemar, Yemar share bukhra. He said, this is Yemar, the one that's matir the Bechorot. It seems that he didn't agree with it so much. Vilcheta ed mipi ed kasher le bechor. Gemara goes, it is kasher for a bechor. Last point, halot devash. We said in the end of our Mishnah that if you have the halot devash, would be the
honeycomb,
exactly, that was grinded or crushed before Shabbat, and now it was oozing out devash on Shabbat. So we had a mahlok in Tana Kama that said asur, and the Bili Ezer said mutar. Again, you crush the honeycomb before Shabbat. Now it's just oozing the oil out of the wax. And now we have machloket, can you eat that honey on Shabbat or not? Machloket in the Mishnah. So comes the Gemara and says, Ki atar av Hoshaya min Harda'a. When Av Hoshaya came from the Harda'a city in Babel, atai came ba'aite matnita biyadeh. And he brought with him a braita. And what was the braita? Zetim v'anavim shiriskan me'erev Shabbat. You have olives and grapes that you crushed them already from me'erev Shabbat. Not that they were just oozing. You actually crushed them me'erev Shabbat. V'yatsu me'asmam asurim. Tanakama says, asur, to eat the what comes out. V'rebi li'ezev v'rebi shimon matirin. And the two rabbis, v'rebi shimon, say, since you crushed them before Shabbat, the stuff that comes out is mutar. Amar of Yosef, Gavra Yitirat HaLashmeina. What did you come and teach us with this statement? Just the extra rabbi? Which means we know this from our Mishnah. What's the difference between what you told me and the Mishnah that I had? Didn't the Mishnah discuss a honeycomb that was crushed? So what's the difference of a honeycomb that was crushed or grapes and olives that were crushed? So what did you add by the Braita? You added me the Bishamon? He said, our Mishnah, we just know it's a Malok at Tanakh Kama to be the Ezer. You came along and said, Rabbi the Ezer and Rabbi Shimon, Matir. Hazak Baruch, you brought us a Braita to add the extra, Gavra Yitera, to add the extra opinion? Amar le Abaye Tuva Kamashmala. He said, what are you talking? This Braita teaches us plenty. The imim matnitin, because if you just had the Mishnah, Hava amina hatam hu demi ikara ukhla ul besof ukhla. I would say, you know why Rabbi Eliezer is lenient in the Mishnah? Because the honey starts off as ochel. It's ochel when it was in the beehive. And when it comes out, it's also ochel. And therefore, it's not considered a mashkeh. And therefore, there's no gezerah that you're going to come to make sa'itah, because it's not considered a mashkeh. So therefore, in that case, I'll say Rabbi Eliezer says it's mutar. However, aval hachad the mikra uchla b'sof mashkeh emalo. But here it starts off the grape as ochel, and now on Shabbat you have oozing out of it juice. Maybe there I'll say that the eitz is going to be mahmir, because now it's already domeh to sa'ita. You might come to be actually squeeze the remnants out. Kamash malan that it's still mutar. Why is it still mutar? So it's still mutar, because once it's crushed, Rabbi Eliezer said, you're not going to come and squeeze something that's crushed already. Which is one thing if the grapes are there, whole, and they're oozing, then you can make a gizrah, you might come to squeeze the grape, because it's intact. But once already was crushed from before Shabbat, and now it's oozing, so you might say, oh, this is considered mashkin. Oh, mashkin, that's worse than the case of the dvash, because the dvash, okay, nothing changed. However, maybe when it went from Ochet to Mashkeh, maybe you might come to squeeze it. Come on, you're not going to come and squeeze it. Why? Because already it is crushed from before Shabbat. Now, it should be pointed out, just one thing that the Rash says, that even though Dvash is considered a Mashkeh, it's one of the seven Mashkim that can be Makshir. And here we're calling it an Ochet, so it says only the Enyan Hakshara we call it a Mashkeh. But for everything else, Dvash has a din of a Ochet. Mishnah. Kol שבא בחמין מערב שבת שורין אותו בחמין בשבת, וכל שלא בא בחמין מערב שבת מדיחין אותו בחמין בשבת, חוץ מן המליח הישן וקוליאס האספנין שהדחתן זוהי גמר מלאכתן. This Mishnah is actually a Mishnah that we should be familiar with. We did have it earlier in the Masechet. And the Mishnah says, "Kol sheba behamin me'ayim Shabbat." Anything that was soaked in water, me'ayim Shabbat, meaning it was cooked in hot water before Shabbat. So shorin oto behamin b'Shabbat. So you can re-soak it in hot water on Shabbat, because we have a principle in bishul ahar bishul that once an item is cooked, so you can't cook something twice. So therefore, since it was cooked from before Shabbat, so now you can take that same item and put it in hot water. Of course, we're talking about water that's not on the fire itself, because we know that there are other restrictions like that. But let's say a kli dishon, a first vessel that was on the fire, now it's off the fire, even though it has the ability to cook, since this item was cooked from before Shabbat, there is no problem to place it in the kli dishon. However, something that was not cooked from before Shabbat, so then it says madihin oto behamin b'Shabbat. So you're only allowed to pour water on it, but you're not allowed to soak it in water. Now the question amongst the Rishonim is that you're pouring water on this non-cooked item. You're pouring it from what vessel? So some Rishonim want to say you're pouring it from a kli dishon, because while a kli dishon has the ability to cook when you put things in it, but pouring from a kli dishon has a status like a second vessel, like a kli sheni, and does not have the ability to cook. So when it says now Mishnah, madihin oto behamin b'Shabbat, means you can pour from a kli dishon on the non-cooked item. However, there's a second opinion that Tosfot brings down that says no, pouring from a kli dishon actually has the ability to cook, and therefore you would not be allowed to pour from a kli dishon. So what is our Mishnah talking about? You can pour from a kli sheni, because pouring from a kli sheni does not have the ability to cook. To that, the Tosfot asks, why only pouring from a kli sheni? You should be allowed to actually soak it in a kli sheni. Why does the Mishnah say madihin? It should say shorin. To that, Tosfot answers that even placing something that's raw in a kli sheni, mehzik and bashel, it looks like cooking, and therefore he only allows to pour from a kli sheni. So again, either madihin, either means pouring from a kli dishon, or a kli sheni. Chutz min amaliyah hayashan, the old salted fish, that's a fish that is salted for a year already, and therefore even pouring from a kli sheni will have the ability to cook a dag. Within the combination of its salt and the hot water of a kli sheni pouring on it, it'll have the ability to cook it. The kulyasa ispanin, that's the Spanish mackerel, that also is a fish that she says that is also very salty, and they would pour hot water over it and it would also make it edible. And that's considered gemar melachtan, and as she says, the melacha over here is bishul, it's cooking. Even though other poskim wanted to say that the issue over here is makeh bepatish, and because they want to say it's not the water alone, the hot water that's doing the cooking, because after all it was salted, so it's a combination. So they want to say it's the makibbe patish, adding final touches. There's a biur halacha that comes out. It's really bishul, and he rules in makibbe patish beochlin, that the melacha makibbe patish does not have applicability by foods. Shadahatan zuhi gemar melachtan. Okay, because even pouring water on these two types of fish is considered the melacha. The Gemara says kegon mai. You said that a type of food that was soaked in water before Shabbat, meaning it was cooked, you're allowed to re-soak it in even kli dishon water off the fire on Shabbat. So the Gemara wants to know, what type of food is re-soaked in hot water? Why would you soak a cooked food in hot water? They just want to know what type of item you're talking about. Amar of Safra, kegon tanegotad Rabbi Abba. Like the chicken that Rabbi Abba used to eat. Rashi tells us that Rabbi Abba, for medicinal reasons, used to cook a chicken and then would soak it in hot water again in order to make it soft, in order to serve its purpose. So therefore, they're saying that that's the food that we're talking about, a solid food like a chicken that was cooked already, that's re-soaked or re-cooked in order to make it soft. Now the Gemara says, V'amar av safra, zimna hada ikla'i'at dehatam. Says, one time I found myself by Rabbi Abba, the ochlan mine, and I ate from this chicken. The ila Rabbi Abba, and if it wasn't that Rabbi Abba, the ashkiyan hamra, that he gave me to drink wine, bar taltat tarfe, that was 3 years old, itnese, I would have puked it up. Which means it seems that Rav Safra wasn't too fond of this recipe of the Tannegolet of Rabbi Abba. And he said it was so ma'us, Rashi says, so repulsive to him that if he didn't give him a glass of wine to drink after it, then you know, he wouldn't have been able to stomach it. Rabbi Yochanan, now the Gemara wants us talking about the different rabbis' reactions to different type of foods. So now the Gemara tells us how Rabbi Yochanan, who was a rabbi from Israel, felt about some of the Babylonian foods. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Rayik, he used to spit mekutach de bablaeh, from the Babylonian kuta. That was like a sour cream that they used to eat. So that she says he used to spit just thinking about it, because he held that it was like, you know, a very repulsive type of food. Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef, who was a rabbi from Bavel, you know, came to defend the Babylonian foods. So he says, Viliruk anan metanegotad Rabbi Abba. Yeah, and we spit from the tanegolot of Rabbi Abba. Just like he spits from our kutah, you know, we spit from their recipes also. Their tannegot of Rabbi Abba is not so tasty as well. They're odd. And furthermore, Amar Rav Gaza. Rav Gaza, who was a rabbi from Israel, once said, Zimna hadak li'it lehatam. He says, one time I was there in Bavel, ve'avdit kutah de bablae. And they made for me this, you know, this yogurt or the sour cream of the Babylonians. Sha'ilu mineh. And he said that when he came back, all the sick people of the West were asking for the recipe. So Rabbi Yosef was trying to say, you know, how bad could this kutah be? You know, Rav Gaza went and he came back and they were all asking for the recipe. So therefore, you know, don't exaggerate when you tell me you were spitting on the kutah. Now the Gemara says, Kol shelo ba bechamin. We said, anything that was not cooked from before Shabbat, certainly one is not allowed to soak it in a kli lishon water on Shabbat, but you can pour from either a kli lishon or a kli sheni, depending on the machloket of the shonim, except for two types of fish, the kolyasa ispanim and the maliyah hayasham. So the Gemara says, hidiyah mai. Let's say he actually pours from a kli lishon or a kli sheni on these fish. What's the isur? So Amar Rav Yosef, hidiyah hayav hatat. So you're subject to a hayuf hatat. If you did it b'shogeg, it's considered, as we said, cooking. Amar mor bered ravina afanan amitanin. Actually, we learned it in the Mishnah. Chutz memaliyah yashan v'kolyas espanin. Except for these two types of fish that get cooked even by a pouring from the hot water on them. Shadahatan zui gemar melachtan. Clearly, the language of the Mishnah is that the pouring of the water on them is the finishing of the melacha. So you see, it's not a rabbinical melacha, it's actually a deoraita. Shema mina. Yativ Rav Hiya bar Abba v'Rabbi Ase kamed Rabbi Yohanan. So it says the rabbis, Rabbi Hiya and Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Ase, were sitting in front of Rabbi Yohanan. And the Gemara says, V'yativ Rabbi Yohanan v'kam min namnim. And Rabbi Yohanan was dozing off. Amar le Rabbi Hiya bar Abba le Rabbi Ase. So Rabbi Hiya bar Abba asks Rabbi Ase, "Mepene ma ofot shebe Babel shemenim? Why are the birds in Babel fat? Meaning they're healthy, they're you know, fatty birds, as opposed to the birds in Israel." So Amar le, so he told him, "Klach le midbar Gaza. If you go to the area of Gaza, which is in Israel, and I'll show you that there's even fatter birds in Gaza than there is in Babel." So again, the first rabbi was trying to say that Babel has something over Israel, and the answer is no, Israel is better than Babel. So the next question he asked him was, "Mepene ma mu'adim shebe Babel semehim? Why are the festivals in Babel, when they're celebrated, the people are much more joyous than the festivals that are celebrated in Eretz Yisrael?" So the answer was, "Mepene shehem aniyim." So he said, it's not because of anything, but it's because they're poor. And therefore, all year round, they can't enjoy good tasting foods. So the few times a year on the holidays when they get, you know, good food, so therefore they're much happier, as opposed to the people in Israel, where they have money all year round, so therefore they don't give the you know, the joy on the holiday is not as evident. The next question was, "Bepenei ma tamidei hachamim shebebabel mitzuyanim?" Why did the tamidei hachamim, the scholars in Babel, why did they wear fancy clothes? Why did they adorn themselves in their finery? So the Gemara answers, the rabbi answered him, "Defisha enam b'nei Torah." It's because they're really not Torah scholars, meaning, you know, they have to compensate the lack of knowledge that they have with nice clothes in order that they'll receive respect. As opposed to the rabbis of Israel, have the scholarship, so therefore they don't have to, you know, dress the part of a scholar because they're respected for their wisdom. Why do the Gentiles, why are they mizuhamim? What's the word that he gives you for mizuhamim? Why are they impure? Okay, it's like a spiritual impurity, it seems that they're talking about. So it says, "Mepenesh she'ochlim shekasim urmasim," because they eat all types of crawling creatures, like frogs and reptiles and mosquitoes and all those type of things, that brings them to spiritual impurity. So those are the questions that were asked while Rabbi Yohanan was sleeping. So the Gemara says, "It'ar behu Rabbi Yohanan." In the interim, Rabbi Yohanan woke up, and it seems in his sleep he heard the, listening to the conversation. "Amar lehu." So he told the young rabbis, "Dardeke." Dardeke means bahurim. And young students that they didn't yet reach Sevara. "Lo kach amarti lachem. Didn't I tell you once? Emor lechokhma achotiat." Right? The Pasuk says in Mishle, call wisdom your sister. So how did the Yohanan explain this Pasuk? "Im barur lecha hadavar ka achotecha shi asura lecha omrehu." If when somebody asks you a question, if you're certain of the answer, as certain as you are that your sister is forbidden to you, then answer. "V'im lav lo tomruhu." And if you're not as certain, don't answer. So he was trying to say, what are you giving these answers for? You're not certain if those are the answers. So they came along and said, "Amru le vele malan mor ezemen." Okay, so let our master, Rabbi Yohanan, you give us the answer to some of these questions. "Mepene ma ofot shebebabel shemenim." He says, why are the birds in Babel, why are they fat? So he answered, "Mepene shelo galu." Because they never went into exile. And because they stayed in the same place, they were able to grow. As opposed to birds that go into exile, we're going to quote a pasuk that's going to show it weakens them and it thins them out and it causes them to be frail. Shne'emar, as the pasuk says, this pasuk actually comes from Yirmiyahu. Sha'anan Moab min Ne'orav. Sha'anan means Moab was tranquil from its youth. Veshakatu el Shemarav. And it was resting in quiet, sitting on its sediments. I mean, like wine that rests on its sediments and doesn't move. So to the Moab area, they were settled over there. Ubagola lohadach. And they never went into exile. And the end of the pasuk says, Alken amad tamo. And therefore, their taste, literally, or their reasoning stood for them. Ve'recho lo namar, nor did their aroma dissipate. Which they're trying to say is that when somebody is in the same place, it brings them health and it brings them a certain amount of stability, and therefore the birds of Babel are stronger and fatter because the animals were never exiled. Now, who says that the birds of Israel were ever in exile? So the Gemara says, "Ve'acha minalan degalu." And in Israel, how do you know that the birds went into exile? The Tanya says, "Ve'braita." Rabbi Yehuda Omer, "Nun bet shana," 52 years. "Lo avad ish bihuda," a person did not step foot in Yehuda. These are referring to the 52 years after the destruction of the first temple. For 52 years, the Pasuk is going to tell us there was complete desolation until Sidkiyah, came back 18 years before the building of the second Beit HaMikdash, and they started the movement to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash, which was completed 70 years after the destruction of the first temple. In any event, the Shne'emar, the Pasuk says, Aleharim Esa Bechi Vanehi. This Pasuk also is in Yirmiyah. The prophet says, on the mountains I will let out a cry, Vanehi, and a woe. Ve'al na'ot midbar kina, the Pasuk continues, and the Pasuk goes on and says, Me'of ha'shamayim ve'ad behema, from the birds of the sky to the animals, nadedu, they moved, and halachu, and they walked, which means even the birds were exiled, even the birds were moved from their place. So the Gemara says, behema, Begematria hamishin detartin havu. The word behema numerically equals 52. So it's alluding to us that for 52 years there was actually an exile even of the animals of Jerusalem. The reason why they make the derasha on the word behema, because in that perasha the word behema is written twice. So one of the words behema is for a derasha. So that from there they learned that for 52 years they were in exile. Amar Rav Yaakov, Amar Rav Yohanan, kulan hazru. All the animals eventually did come back to Eretz Yisrael, meaning whatever animals were there before the exile that went out eventually returned. Chutz, the kulyasa ispanin, except for the Spanish mackerel. It seemed that it never came back. Now why? Why didn't the Spanish mackerel swim back? The Amar Rav, because Rav taught, Hane Madre de Babel. These slopes of Babel. It's referring to the Euphrates River that somehow through underground channels and tunnels, the Euphrates River somehow reaches Jerusalem. And it actually says, Hani Madrid Mehadre Maya Le'en Etam. It returns water to an area called Ein Etam, which is actually in the highest spot in Jerusalem, which is by the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara is going to tell us that the fish that were exiled actually swam through those underground channels, and they made it all the way back to Eretz Yisrael. The only thing is, Eretz Yisrael is north, which Babel is low. And therefore the fish had to actually swim upward in order to get back. So the Gemara says, Ve'hai, and these kulyas are spending these Spanish mackerel, Kevan de lo sharir shidre, since they don't have strong spines, lo matzet salik, they weren't able to make the trek upward. So therefore while they were able to be exiled, because going down to Babel, they're going downstream, but they weren't able to swim upstream, back through those channels in order to get to Israel. So they stayed the exile. Now, why are the festivals in Babel Semehim? Why is there joy? Because they weren't included in the curse that the inhabitants of Jerusalem were affected by. What was that curse? Dichtiv. The Pasuk says this comes from Hosea. Bishpati kol mesosa. The Navi says, I'm going to stop all their joyous occasions, Hagga, their holidays, Chodsha, their Rosh Chodesh, Bishabbatah, Vechol Mo'ada. And therefore, that was a specific curse for the inhabitants of Israel, Uchtiv. And the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, Chodshechem u'mo'adechem sane'a nafshi. God says, your holidays and your Rosh Chodesh, sane'a nafshi, I despise them. That was a curse to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And the end of that Pasuk says, Hayu alai letorach. God says, they were actually a burden on me. So the Gemara says, Mai hayu alai letorach. What was the burden that the Jewish people were burdening HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Gemara says, Amar bin Azar, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo dayan li Yisrael shechotin lefanai. It's not enough that the Jewish people sin in front of me. Ela shematrichin oti lida. they trouble me to have to figure out and calculate which gezerah I should bring on them. It seems God punishes, you know, different types of punishment for different types of sins. So are you allowed to talk? I mean, you were troubling me with all your sins to have to calculate exactly which punishment fits exactly the sin. Of course, it's not a Torah for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Pesul is trying to say that that was part of the sin, that we inconvenience Kiviyakol God, that He has to, punish us in different ways. Amar Yitzhak, En lecha kol regel veregel shelo bata boleshet tzipuri. So the Gemara is trying to show us that how the holidays in Israel were very difficult and far from being happy and joyous. So there wasn't a holiday celebrated in the city of Tzipuri, which was in Israel, that the boleshet, as she says, was the armies of the king that did not come and invade the city on that day. So they were always known on the Jewish holidays, there was always action from the foreign armies. So there wasn't a holiday celebrated in Tiberias that, you know, you didn't have the Agmon, which we'll explain was the governor or a ruler or an official. Again, these were all enemies of the Jewish nation that would come in and show their presence on the Jewish holiday, which would cause us anguish on the holiday. Why did the Talmidei Chachamim in Babel, you know, dress nicely? It says, Lefi she'enan b'nei mekoman. Rabbi Yohanan defends the scholars of Babel, and says it's not because what you said, because they're not B'nai Torah, and therefore they have to compensate their lack of scholarship in clothes. No, it's because they're foreigners, which means those were the exilees from Israel that had to go to Babel. And we have a rule, the Amre Inche, because the people say, B'mata Shemai, B'lo Mata Totbai. In a person's place, B'mata, how does a person receive recognition? Shammai, from his name. Which is when you're living in a place, when you're a citizen of the place, people know you from your reputation who you are. Belomata, but if you're a foreigner, they don't know who you are, you don't have a reputation. So therefore, Totbai, you have to dress on a higher level in order to earn and gain the respect. So he's saying, wasn't the fact they weren't B'nai Torah, they just weren't known, because they were foreigners. So therefore, they had to dress nicely. And he quotes a pasuk. Pasuk actually is from Yeshaya. And the pasuk is Habaim, meaning the ones that came. Those are the ones that came from Israel to Babel. Yashresh Yaakov, right? They were rooted in the house of Jacob. Yasitz ufarah Israel, and they flourished and they grew. So, what does the Gemara say about this pasuk? Elut Amar Tani Rabbi Yosef. We have a brighter from Rabbi Yosef. Elut Tamidei Chachamim shebeBabel. These are referring to the scholars that came to Babel, she'osim tzitzin ufrahim la'Torah, that they make tzitzin ufrahim, all sorts of beautiful interpretations. Literally, tzitzin ufrahim is, how do you explain it? Tzitzin ufrahim would mean buds and blossoms, which is that good interpretations to the Torah, which means he's trying to say, from this pasuk, you see, there were scholars. You see, they had tzitzin ufrahim, they used to flourish the Torah with their beautiful interpretations. So why do they dress nice? Because they don't come from the place. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen ve'amen.